Hello and welcome to the DHI podcast. DHI stands for Developing Health and Independence. I'm Dom and this is the third in our series of podcasts for DHI as part of the Vision Project. So far in the series we've looked at what DHI is all about, its underlying ethos that drives it and the services it provides. And one of the key elements of DHI that has emerged from the first two podcasts is the vital importance of early interventions. If you can get to somebody at an early stage, quite clearly that can have a major part to play in saving that person from a greater range of challenges down the road. This takes us pretty quickly to the question of what DHI is doing for children and young people. And the answer is they have a whole service dedicated to under 18s. In Bath and North East Somerset, that's called Project 28. And in Wiltshire, it's Motivate. The same range of services, if you like, but two different names. And exploring alcohol and drug services for young people is the theme of this, our third DHI podcast.
The DHI podcast with Dom Chambers.
Developing health and independence.
The power of these podcasts, and incidentally, this goes for audio and radio in general, lies not so much in what the professionals have to say, although that is absolutely an important ingredient. But ultimately, what drives these podcasts to a wider audience are the stories of those with lived experience. In order to bring you those stories, I've had a range of amazing conversations with some remarkable people, many of whom are still on their journey of recovery, and there are those who I've talked to who can look back and articulate what often amount to be disturbing events from the past, which they describe and want to bring to our attention to help others who may be in similar circumstances. In this edition of the program, we will mainly be hearing from two people in one conversation. That's Becky, who works for Project 28, and she brought into the Summer Valley FM studio where we record these podcasts, Izzy, who has her story to tell from the recent past. And whilst we're there, we're also going to hear from a young man who I'm going to call Samuel, who came to the studio on a separate occasion to share his story. Now, I should say that due to the location of our studios, all the conversations and contributions in this podcast are from Project 28. But do bear in mind that whilst we're talking about DHI's services for young people in Bath and North East Somerset, these are services that are replicated across Wiltshire under the title of Motivate. That is written, incidentally, M-O-T-I-V and then the numeral 8. With that explained, here now are the voices coming up in this edition of the programme.
Because I didn't know what drugs do to you. I was just like, I'm a teenager, it's fun, this is what teenagers do. I just learnt more and I was like, this shouldn't be going in your body. Like, this isn't okay.
That really hit home when there's a police officer stood in front of you, taking down your details, taking down your address.
Yeah, we work with a lot of young people that come from difficult backgrounds and have had difficult experiences. And I think, unfortunately, in our society, young people do have quite a bad reputation. And if you hear about young people using drugs, you automatically think it's kind of them being rebellious or they're just, you know, making stupid decisions. But when you actually get down and talk to young people like we do, you really find out kind of what the root is, and that's really important to understand.
You want someone to speak to, but you don't feel strong enough to reach out. But sometimes that person needs to reach out to you, and that's what they did. They reached out to me when I needed them to reach out to me.
I love my future right now. Looking back at it now, I'm just like, what was I doing?
And there's plenty more of that to come over the next half an hour or so. But to get it all going, let's go back to the summer of 2019. When I invited Becky and Izzy to join me in the studio, and inevitably, I suppose, my first question was to Becky, and I asked her to introduce what Project 28 is all about.
So Project 28 is a young person's drug and alcohol service, and we cover BAINES. So we work with young people to provide information, education, harm reduction advice around various different substances that they might be using. And we also work with young people if they would like to stop or reduce their substance use. We assist them with strategies to help them with those difficulties as well.
So give me an example of how someone might find themselves in need of being part of Project 28.
Yes, we work with a variety of young people. Some young people, it's kind of their dabbling or is their experimental phase of kind of trying out cannabis. We know that teenagers are quite risk takers and it's kind of a new thing. For other young people, a lot of their drug use might come from some difficult past experiences and they use drugs as a coping mechanism. So that might be, I don't know, family bereavement or mental health difficulties, and they've kind of not found healthy, positive strategy to manage those feelings, so they do turn to substances. So our job is to kind of come in and help them through those problems and get them into a position where they can then kind of let go of drugs and find more positive coping strategies.
And at what point does youthful experimentation become something that's really a terrible lifestyle choice and is going down the wrong pathway?
So when we look at drug use, we categorise it into different sections. So we've got experimental drug use, and that might be young people that are kind of starting out, having a go. Maybe their friends have tried it and they want to see what it's all about. It might then become recreational. So these are young people that are using every now and then, maybe for a special occasion, a party, something like that. And then when it really becomes an issue is when it comes to problematic drug use. So that's when that drug is having a significant effect on other areas of their life. So it might be that they're not going to school because they're smoking a lot of weed and they're not getting out of bed on time, or, you know, relationships are breaking down, they're in debt because they're buying so many substances. That's when it starts to become really, really problematic for young people.
And eventually all those what you might describe as usual connections, family ties or ties with your carers and foster people, schools and colleges and other organisations, they gradually kind of melt away, don't they? Leaving a person very isolated.
Yes, they can do, yes.
So in that instance, when someone is either fully isolated or increasingly isolated, how can you reach them?
Do you mean in terms of how they can get support from us?
Yeah, or? I mean, I'm just wondering how that connection is made to somebody who really needs the services. And yes, they might come across you themselves and make the first approach. They may have a loved one who makes that approach. And I'm sure there's also, but I'm just wondering how, there must be people out there who are really in difficulties, possibly not realising full scale of those difficulties. And so how can you as an organisation reach them?
Yeah, so as you said, people can self-refer in if they know about it, or families, friends, or people from school. We get a lot of referrals from school as well if they recognise that young people may be at kind of risk. But we also do a lot of outreach in the community. So we try and go into schools and do assemblies, do a bit of education, tell them a bit about our service. And we also do outreach, try and do it once a week kind of in the local community. So we cover Keynsham, we might go out in Radstock, trying to find groups of young people to kind of have a chat with them, get our name out there and let them know what our service is about in case they do want to access it.
Izzy, let's bring you into this conversation. Thanks so much for coming into Summer Valley today. How did you get involved with Project 28?
I got involved with Project 28. I got assigned when I got into hospital. It was about a year ago. I ended up having to go in hospital because I bit through my cheek because I was gurning too much. And then I got assigned through Project 28 from hospital. Since then, I've stuck with it. And then when you turn 18, you legally can't do Project 28, can you? And so then after that, I've been really good. And thank you to Becky, she was my support worker. Like, it sounds corny as it does, but it's helped me for the better. Like, since finishing it, compared to last year to this year, I'm doing so much better. Like, I'm staying in college, I've got my life planned out, I know where I want to go and stuff like that, compared to like last year in summer. I was like, I don't know what I want to do, I just want to sit in bed, do loads of other drugs and just like not have a care in the world, which is like, looking back at it now, I'm just like, what was I doing?
Well, have you been able to rationalise what you were doing?
Yes and no. How it first started was because I lost my best friend to suicide. So then I kind of was like, I just want to be happy type thing. Like, what can I find to be happy? And they were doing pills quite a lot. And because it's a high drug, it makes you happy. It was kind of like that was my way to get that glimpse of happiness for a couple of hours. And then I realised after that, having to go into hospital, I was like, this isn't okay anymore. Like, I can't put words together, like sentences together. Certain things aren't adding up, like I'm going downhill and I can't rationalise it at all. Like, it was just like, I was a bit sad, I wanted to be happy for a bit and then it kind of just went bad from then.
So through drug taking,
yeah,
you ended up in hospital with what sounds like a sort of a mishap. But presumably a painful one, it sounds like.
Yeah, it was very painful. After having like a sesh at my mate's house, I woke up with massive, like, my cheeks really like puffy. I was like, it was so bad. And like looking inside my mouth at the point, it was like a big chunk of my inner cheek was missing. And went to hospital after that, and it was so painful. Like, my whole cheeks were swollen for a good 2 weeks. I couldn't go into college because they were like, why do you have, like, massive cheeks? It was so embarrassing. Like, it's not worth...
When you came to,
yeah,
in a kind of rational frame of mind, I mean, what were your first feelings lying there in hospital, realising what you'd done?
I was just like, I can't have done that. It wasn't like me. I must have, like, taken so much that I just, my brain, and I wasn't able to realise what was happening. Like, I must have blacked out, and I was like, my mates were like, your cheeks, and I was like, no, and then, yeah.
Then presumably a doctor came along and explained what had happened.
Well, I told the doctor, like, I did these substances, and then, like, we can't really do anything about it, because it's like a cut, so it's like a cut in your cheek, because your cheeks, well, your mouth, like, heals things quite quickly. They were like, you can just take some medicine and hope it gets better, like, if it goes manky, come in, but we can't really give you anything for it. So I kind of just, like, after being there for a few hours, they were like, you can go now. And
not much more to be done here, so no. You then had that kind of going home situation and reflecting on what had happened.
Yeah.
And how did Project 28 come into that process?
Well, it was a few weeks after, because the hospital said, like, we have to refer you because you're underage, you're under 18, and, like, this is it protocol? Is that the right word? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then after a few weeks, you came along and was like, this isn't mandatory, but if you do want to learn more, and this, you explained everything about Project 28. And I sat down, and my mum was like, I would recommend you to do this, because, like, just for knowing what different drugs do and, like, to make yourself more aware, it's worth doing. And then after our little meeting, I was like, let's do it. Like, do it for my sake and my friends' sake, so that I can, like, tell them, like not teach them, kind of, and be like, don't take this much. If you do want to take this drug, don't take this much. Make sure you do this and that and the other, so you are safe and you won't end up going into hospital and, yeah, hurting yourself.
At that stage for you, was it about a more safe approach to taking drugs, or was it about how you could quit them completely?
At first it was more of a to do it safely, and then after just learning about what it actually does to you inside, because I didn't know what drugs do to you. I was just like, I'm a teenager, it's fun, this is what teenagers do. I just learned more and I was like, this shouldn't be going in your body, like, this isn't okay. First of all, it was, I still want to do this, I just want to learn how to do it safely. And then I guess by the end of summer, it was like, actually, I'm enjoying summer without doing this, that, and the other. And it kind of just, like, over from quitting, like, stopping with you, it's like gone, I'm bed, like, I'm not doing it compared to as much as I did last, like, it's good, like, it's more positive and stuff like that.
And what were they doing to you?
I was grumpy, I was moody, no motivation in the world. I wasn't a not nice person, but, like, my whole aspects of life was just, like, who cares? Like, I only live once. I don't care if I die tomorrow type thing. It was, like, grumpy, yeah. Like, horrible to people. It was just horrible to myself, if that makes sense.
You were down on yourself, yeah. Really, yeah. I mean, is there something in there, do you think, about if you put chemicals inside you to make your brain go one way, that perhaps it wants to swing back the other way at some point?
Yeah, that's what I learned. Like, if you do a substance, whatever that substance, if it's ones that gets you high or, like, we'll say a happy and sad drug, if it makes you happy, the next day you're going to get what's called come down, and you're going to be, like, sadder due to the chemicals in your body that makes you happy, and then vice versa. If it's a sad drug, then you're just going to be sad for a while, and then you got to let that, like, happy chemical build up again. So, like, if you do a lot of a happy drug, you're going to be quite down for a lot until your body can restore the happy, like, chemical again.
So conclusion there is, yeah, better to sort of leave it in its natural state.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Like, just leave it how your body is, and, like,
yeah,
if you are feeling sad, best to just talk to people instead of, like, going towards the drug. Because you can, like, if you do take it too far and don't get any help, you can end up either doing it so much you do end up passing away, or you go too far that you can't go back, and it's like, you've wasted, you're only, like, 16, 17, you wasted so many more years in your life, and you could die from, like, suicide or from your body just giving up on you at such a young age, and it's like, it's not worth it. Like, you're so young.
At the start of this conversation, you said that one of the reasons you'd taken drugs was because something terrible had happened in your life, and that made you sad, and you wanted to put yourself into a happier place to combat that. When you explain that to the people at Project 28, how were they able to help with what you might call the core reason for taking drugs?
Just getting it out, really, and just talking. Because, like, it was built up for a good month without talking to anybody. My mum was like, you need to talk to somebody. Like, you need to talk to somebody professionally. And, like, once a week, for the first half an hour, just me blasting out, ranting, load of random stuff. And it just helped. Instead of keeping it in, it was just, like, let it all out and then go on from there and, like, find positive things to, like, make it better and stuff like that.
You've talked about your mum, so that's obviously a core relationship for you. If she cares about her daughter and loves her daughter, at what point did she need some help with you making some bad lifestyle decisions?
She wasn't happy with me at all, but she just kept going, like, at the end of the day, we cannot stop you. We can ground you. We can, like, say, don't do this. We can get Becky to come and help you. But once you leave this house, we don't know what you're up to, and the best way we can help you is to teach you, and then if you, like, once you get taught, you can make your own
informed choices.
Yeah, there we go, that's the word.
What he said.
Yeah.
And you presumably had sufficient respect for your mum to accept that advice, and that was part of the whole thing of getting involved with Project 28.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Okay. So how old were you when this happened?
I was 17.
17?
Yeah, so not that, like, it was a year ago. So I was coming to being an adult.
The DHI Podcast with Dom Chambers.
Developing health and independence.
What I'm noticing from Izzy's story here is that there's some joined up thinking between the various services that are there to help young people, whether that help is an acute need or a longer term plan for them to positively progress. And it's good to hear that the medical profession was obviously there to help Izzy in her immediate need of what had happened to her, but was also sufficiently concerned for her long-term well-being to refer her to Project 28. But as we'll hear from Samuel, the medical profession is not the only service that will refer young people to the project.
About a year ago, I come into contact with the police for not too serious reason, but serious enough that they seem fit to caution and refer me to Project 28, and I saw that as them giving me a chance rather than saying, yeah, we're charging you with this, this and this. They gave me a chance, I took that chance, and I went with it.
And that's great to hear. What about the circumstances that led up to that intervention by the police? Because young people often confronted by choices, and sometimes what can look very glamorous and, you know, appealing can turn out to be the wrong choice. And how are you reflecting back on the company you were keeping at the time?
Well, I definitely know that for a long time, before I was even keeping the company, my mum was telling me, watch out who you chill with, watch who you spend your time with, watch who you get seen with. It's quite a big one as well. And that really hit home when, you know, when there's a police officer stood in front of you, taking down your details, taking down your address, and you're obligated to give them that information because you've done something or whatever it might be.
This situation that happened to you, how did you come to the idea that this could be seen in a positive way to help you make a positive progression with your life? Is it down to the relationship with your mum, or what kind of influences did you have?
Well, music has always been a big influence in my life, and I knew that I'd seen other people, you know, telling their story through a microphone, be it through a speech or a song or a spoken word or a poem. I've seen and experienced a variety of different art forms. So when it came to telling my own story, I knew that I could use that as a positive to build on and progress from, and to show people that what they might have heard about me previously isn't necessarily the truth of who I am.
You're clearly, you know, a positive guy, and you've made a very positive decision about that. And fantastic that you're using your music talent to that end. How did being involved with Project 28 help with that?
Being involved with Project 28 it motivated me when I didn't necessarily have the motivation, because, you know, when you get that phone call saying, oh, are you coming in today? And you're like, no, I don't feel like it. And you're still encouraged because people know that that's just how you're feeling, which is speaking. It's not really, really deep down. You want to come in, you want to get the help, and you want someone to speak to, but you don't feel strong enough to reach out. But sometimes that person needs to reach out to you. And that's what they did. They reached out to me when I needed them to reach out to me. And I reached out to them when I felt like I needed to reach out to them. And I think that's what made it so productive.
And has that helped with your confidence?
Definitely. It's definitely helped with my confidence in all aspects, from, you know, them encouraging me to do music and pursue music and just everyday life.
So you've come all the way out to Midsummer Norton to meet me today. And we're having this conversation. I wonder if you'd had the confidence to have done that had it not been for Project 28.
Well, I mean, you never know, because you can't speculate on things that haven't happened. But to be honest, I think I would have brushed it off and seen it as just not the opportunity that I see it as now. I probably would have brushed it off and thought I had something better to do with my time. Do you know what I mean?
Talking with Samuel and hearing how he articulates his own story was nothing short of an amazing experience for me. And what perhaps you don't get just from hearing his audio is that he has that wonderful quality of smiling through his eyes. And that no matter what's been going on or what challenges are there still for him to face, there's the glint of hope. There's an inner knowledge and confidence that life is on the improve. As it happens, Samuel has now started an apprenticeship, and his progress to a good place continues. I should also say we'll hear more from him in a future podcast, because having heard his music, I simply couldn't pass up an opportunity to share his talent with you. But that is for another occasion. For now, though, let's return to that conversation I was having with Izzy.
Well, your learning curve in comparison to mine from 17 to 18 is remarkable, really.
Yeah.
You seem in a really good place now. What are you up to at the moment? How's your future looking?
Well, I love my future right now. I'm getting into doing club nights, so I want to be a club promoter. I'm doing loads of festival work during the summer, finish college, want to go travelling, so doing all that.
All that is absolutely spot on from where I'm sitting, for what an 18-year-old should and wants to do.
Yeah.
How can you protect yourself in going out into festivals, going out into the world if you're going to go travelling?
Yeah.
All of which, there's bound to be some vulnerabilities, aren't there? You know,
yeah,
drugs
definitely.
And festivals and parts of the world and certain things, you know. How are you going to protect yourself so that you don't succumb?
Well, like, with the, like, drug-wise of it, like, if you're going out drinking, I guess cover the glass. Is that what you're on about?
Like, well, no, but I think that's a good line.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking more, you know, if you're in an environment where, you know, people are taking drugs, and how are you going to stop yourself kind of for falling into those ways? But actually, you're also raising a very good point, which is a slightly different point, is how can you protect yourself from somebody else drugging you and making you feel vulnerable? So perhaps we just take both of those and answer in turn.
Well, with a group of friends, why isn't there doing drugs? I guess, like, you don't have to. It's up to you. I would recommend don't really do it, because you can have a great time without taking any drugs. Like, if you're old enough, 18, like what I was doing this weekend was I had a barbecue, went to the beach, had a couple ciders, loving life. Like, but back a year ago, it would have been like, let's have some weed, let's have a pill, and like those other stuff. Like, but now you don't really need that. You can just enjoy yourself. If you have good people around you and people that like respect each other, like know good and bad, you don't need to worry about that. But if you're surrounded with people that are more negative, that need to do certain drugs to be happy, then they're not friends, really, at the end of the day. Because, like, if they're really your friends, they don't want you in that bad of a place. And they would have, like, reached out to you and helped you as a person. So, I mean, like, I'll take this because this will make you happy. Instead of, like, talk to me because I can help you be happy. And then in regards to, like, going out and, like, the public situation would be, like, make sure you cover your glass, I guess. Don't take anything that people offer you because you don't know what it is. Like, you hear people that go abroad and they've like somebody's offered them something and they've taken it and they end up like being paralytic on the side of the road, and don't take drinks from anybody either. Like, a couple of times when I've been out, my mates are like taking drinks and they've end up a bit too drunk from what they've drank, and I'm like, mate, are you okay? Like, their eyes a bit like all over the place, and like, water, sit down, we'll take you outside, we'll start from square one and see what happens.
So protect your glass in a public environment, or can, if, or wherever you are.
Yeah.
But also, best not then, from your advice, to accept drinks from people you don't know.
Yeah, definitely don't do that. Like, if you're at the bar, like, even at the bar, bartenders and can drug your drink as much as anybody in a club. Like, you can hear stories about that. But just don't really get any drinks from anybody. Like, even friends can do it as a joke, be like, let's put some of this in a drink, and then have a laugh about it. Because I've had a mate as well that's had that happen to him, and it's like, what, don't do that. Like, if you really trust your friends, you know they're not gonna put stuff in your drinks, but you can buy each other drinks. But like, be careful of your friends as well if you know they're quite heavy drug users.
So you seem a very confident person now, and somebody who's very much in command of her own life, which is fantastic to see. How can you know that you're in the right company? Because it sounds like you've worked that out. Is it an intuitive feeling, or is there something slightly more scientific than that?
I guess, like, what happened was, like, me and my friends started falling out due to, because I was in the group where we all did drugs, so we went our separate ways, we fell out, and I guess from that, we kind of realised we don't need to do drugs, and so we did that, and then we came back together, we've all somehow gone back together, and because we're, like, a couple months older, I know it's not a big difference, but because we've had time to walk away and realize we've just done what normal people do day to day, like go out to the beach, have a barbecue, and more like adulting stuff. Yeah, so like, I guess take a step back and look at your friends and be like, are these the friends you see yourselves in, like, the next 5 years doing all this? No. Do you want to do this in the next 5 years? No. Like, find people that you know that are going to benefit you in the better way, instead of people that use other stuff to benefit your friendship. Yeah.
And with this knowledge and information and how your own personal story has come to a happy place.
Yeah.
Much happier than many 18-year-olds I know. So that's it is very, very good to see. What would you like to say about Project 28? What's your reflections on that organisation?
I love it. Like, a couple of my friends went there before and said they didn't like it. And I was like, I'll give it a shot. Like, it can't be that bad. Like, they're only just helping you. Ever since I met the wonderful Becky, like, legit, I was going to sound so cheesy, it's helped me for the better, like, so much. It's like, we still keep in contact now, and it's, like, really good. I would recommend, if you think or your friend has a problem, it can be drug-related, alcohol, like, friendship-wise, like, if you're in a toxic relationship, go to Project 28 if you're in the Baines area, because it really does help you for the better. Like, don't go in with a fixed mindset, like, go in with an open mindset, be like, they're here to help, like, they're not going to judge you, they're not going to go in behind your back and talk to your parents, be like, guess what, your daughter's doing this and that and the other. Just do it. Like, you might as well just educate yourself a bit, even if, like, deep down you go in there and you, I don't know, you're not going to stop, go there to educate yourself, and then maybe at the end of it you're like, hang on, this isn't okay, like, take a step back. And you'll go. So shout out to Becky for being amazing.
Becky, great cue for you to rejoin the conversation. What Izzy's touching on there, I think, also is that it's not always about being completely at the bottom, is it? Where your whole life has gone totally wrong. There will be people out there saying, you know, well, a doctor says I shouldn't be drinking more than, in men's cases, whatever it is, 21 units a week, and I do a little bit more than that, but, you know, it seems okay. I mean, what Izzy's talking about here is a wider form of education so that we can make the right choices for us, isn't it?
Yes, so at the end of the day, Project is not designed to kind of tell young people what to do. It doesn't work if you just tell them to stop doing that. We're there to kind of provide education at kind of any level. So it might be that people are just drinking a little bit here and there, as teenagers do, or it might be that, like you say, some people are at rock bottom and they need an out. But we work with all levels, or even if young people are starting thinking about using drugs and they haven't actually used drugs yet, it's useful to get involved in projects so we can give you a bit more information about it before you make that choice, and then it's much more of an informed choice.
Izzy's been so articulate with her story. We've got a very clear picture of how the last 2 years of her life has been. How typical is Izzy's story in the wider kind of spectrum of the work of Project 28?
Yeah, we work with a lot of young people that come from difficult backgrounds and have had difficult experiences. And I think, unfortunately, in our society, young people do have quite a bad reputation. And if you hear about young people using drugs, you automatically think it's kind of them being rebellious or they're just making stupid decisions. But when you actually get down and talk to young people like we do, you really find out kind of what the root is, and that's really important to understand.
You've touched on something that I think is really important and actually is something that's pretty well all the last three generations certainly have had to confront, which is a misunderstanding between the generations and being dismissive. But say you're a parent, say you're a carer, and your 14-year-old is just being a little bit bullshy. Not an unusual, perhaps, demeanour for somebody, you know, in the middle of the teenage years. How do you know whether there's a deeper problem that Izzy's mum discovered, and Izzy discovered, or it's just normal teenagers growing up?
Do you mean in terms of, like, drug use? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I do, because I think it's rather like, you know, there are lots of people who get a headache and think they've got brain cancer. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, and you know, I'm not diminishing that because, you know, it's a real fear. But there's a tendency to think the worst of a situation. So my teenage kid has had a strop and stumped off to the bedroom. Does that mean that they are really vulnerable to serial drug abuse, or is that just a teenage tantrum? And how can parents be guided in that kind of thing?
Yeah, so not necessarily, because as we know, teenagers will have their stroppy moments and rebel against parents and guardians and whatever. But, you know, if parents were concerned that there might be a kind of hidden reason for some of their behaviour, there's obviously certain things you can look out for. Kind of, I don't know, if your alcohol's going missing, or if they're coming home smelling of cannabis, or they're starting to hang around with people that you suspect might be using drugs. Those are kind of fairly good indicators that there might be a temptation for them. And young parents and guardians are more than welcome to give us a ring if they've got any concerns. Because sometimes if you've got someone that's not the parent asking the young person, you might get a more honest answer. Because I know children want to keep things from mum and dad. So, yeah.
Tell me, Becky, is there a social side to getting involved with Project 28?
So, yeah, I think a lot of people are worried when they're first referred that it's going to be a really formal thing where you're just sat in the room opposite someone at a table. But we try and keep it as relaxed as possible. We've actually got a base in Southgate Street where we've got sofas, we've got a cheese toasting machine, which is always popular. So young people can come in the weekdays between like 12 and 4 for a drop-in. So young people can just kind of show up, meet with their key worker or meet with another member of staff, have something to eat and drink. It's meant to be a safe space if, you know, if people have things they want to bring and talk about. And we also do a lot of group work as well, so, you know, if there was young people that had friends that were also using drugs and they wanted to do group sessions, we're more than happy to do that as well. And we also sometimes put on, we call them diversionary activities, so we put on some activities normally in the half term or summer holidays where we get groups of young people together, maybe take them off bowling or take them off trampolining or something like that, as to kind of showing them that this is a good way you can have fun without using drugs. So it's can be quite social in that respect as well.
So if people are isolated, as we've been discussing, you know, there could be benefits just on a social level.
Yeah, really. Definitely. And, you know, our work is primarily drugs and alcohol work. But if young people have, like, hobbies and interests that they wanted to pursue, we can help with that as well, help them find something that is going to replace drugs as their interest. We can give free gym passes to young people as well. So if young people want to access the gym or swimming pool, we can go along with them as kind of another hobby and something exciting to do. It's not all just kind of talking across the table.
Becky, you come across as someone who's very motivated, and I'm assuming in there is a great high levels of care of other people. What does motivate you to do what you do?
I think growing up, when I was a teenager, it wasn't that long ago, I like to say, you did get a bad reputation if you were kind of hanging out in a group in town. You know, people would kind of walk across the road to avoid you, even if you weren't doing anything wrong. And I think young people today have even more pressures on them, and there's a lot of bad kind of media about young people. And actually, I'm really motivated to help young people to get through things. You know, we understand that there's a lot of issues that young people face even today that, you know, maybe I wouldn't have even come across as a teenager. There's always more pressures which would lead young people to use drugs, and motivated to kind of help young people explore those reasons in a safe space and kind of become a better version of themselves and learn from those experiences.
Well, thank you very much for telling us your story as well. And I'm sure you've worked this out, but with all the media's bad coverage of young people, you are in a place where young people have a very positive part to play.
Definitely, yes.
Izzy, you're 18 now, yes. And you're clearly motivated that other people should benefit from, you know, the value of your personal experience.
Mm.
Is there a way of keeping in touch with Project 28 in terms of perhaps a mentoring role?
In, like, me becoming a mentor, I've asked you, haven't I, about possibly becoming the mentor, but you have to go through all the social caring and...
number of checks. And,
yeah,
and,
yeah, to make sure you're reliable and you can actually work with young people. And because I'm the same age as quite a few of the people that would be referred to Project 28, I couldn't do it at this stage. I'd have to wait until I'm about 21, 22.
So a little bit further in age.
Yeah, there's an age gap.
I get that. And you may not know the answer to this, but is that something you think you might want to do at some point?
Yeah, because, like, from this experience, like, it's helped me, and I want to be able to, like, help them without being like, don't do this, more like an education, like, to be open with them, be like, yeah, this is what happens. Yes, some people do this, but at the end of the day, do you want to end up, if you carry on like this, to be what you see people on the streets? Like, not saying all drug users end up going on the streets, but a lot of them you see now do take worse of drugs, and, like, to be honest with them instead of, like, sprinkling glitter over everything, because that's not fair on them as well.
One of the things I'm detecting from both your contributions in this conversation is that so much value comes from people opening up, having conversations in a safe space, and that's the starting point to a better life. I think, Izzy, you're an indication of that, aren't you?
I hope so, yeah.
Listen, thank you both very much for coming to Summer Valley FM today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
You can find out more about Project 28 and Motivate by visiting dhi-online.org.uk. My thanks to Becky, Izzy and Samuel for taking the time to talk to me, without which, of course, we wouldn't be able to make the DHI podcast. That is it for this edition of the programme, but I'll catch you back here very soon for another DHI podcast.